A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 448. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Stig of the Dump. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So we are talking about a 2002 BBC adaptation of Clive King's children's novel from the 60s. It was done in six 30-minute episodes. Serialized, and it is a story about a lonely child who befriends a mysterious character he finds in a disused quarry. And of course, that character is Stig, who is like a primitive human or primitive hominid, pre-human type character.
He is indeed the titular Stig of the Dump, and Barney has befriended him. They form this sort of close understanding relationship. He's in this cave dwelling at the bottom of a rubbish dump in an old quarry, as you say, Brian. Barney and Stig continue to work on this home that Stig has made, using items from the dump and things that Barney has got from his grandparents' house, which does cause a few problems when the grandparents notice things are going missing. And of course, all of this while avoiding run-ins with the local bullies, the family of the Snargets, these three siblings in particular who seem to want to terrorize young Barney.
Yes, that's right. And there is a local hunt, which is like a fox hunt on horseback, but without hunting actual animals. They're doing what they call a drag hunt, where they have a person who is leading them on rather than the actual hunting. So the focus is on the horseback pursuit, and Barney's sister is an avid horse rider, and she's involved in this. So she sees a little bit of what's going on, so things move along that way. And while they're at it, they manage to catch some burglars who have been preying on older people in the village. So we get things with that, and of course Barney and Stig will get into problems and Stig's home being endangered and so on.
Absolutely. And we've mentioned that Barney and Lou are staying with their grandparents for the summer holidays because their mother is away on a long holiday abroad. She seems to be a single mother. She's away. She returns from holiday and she has plans to move the family to London. And we both noticed this, Brian, that she doesn't seem to be terribly involved in her children's lives. She seems far more interested in her own life and a new relationship she's formed than actually paying attention to what Barney and Lou have been up to while staying with the grandparents.
That's right. The grandparents seem to be quite focused on the children's welfare. And yeah, the mother pops up from time to time and then disappears just as quickly when her parents are saying, you know, please stay and spend some time with your kids. So that was a dynamic that was very much part of this.
And of course, we've also got to have other sort of threats to drive the story on. So we've got the idea that local developers are thinking of actually developing the quarry and turning it into buildings and homes, presumably, or the council are trying to protect it so that people will stop going in there because it's so dangerous. And you get the local police. We get quite a lot of involvement from a local police officer who discovers Stig's home and some of the things that Stig has in the home. Doesn't see Stig himself because Stig has had to go on the run because of all these threats to his life and his home.
Yes, that's right. They have some things going on there. It is a little bit odd that they're talking about developing this site when it's sort of right underneath this active garbage dump. But there you go. There are changes and things threatening that the cave may be, you know, destroyed for buildings to go in there. So yeah, that's how things go. And we should talk about some changes from the book, because they did change some things. Peter Tabern, as we mentioned, was adapting this for the 2002 production. And part of what we get is Barney researching this character he saw and decides that he is a Steganopithecus, which is a fictional, created for the show, early hominid, and Barney names him Stig for that species name, where in the book, one of the grunts or sounds that Stig made sounded like Stig, so that became his name.
And I suppose in 2002, we can imagine an inquisitive, whatever he is, 10, 11, 12 year old, coming back and immediately looking it up on the internet on his grandparents' computer, which of course in 1963 couldn't be done. So I suppose that change is obvious in a way, Brian.
Yeah, it did sort of need that to make it feel a bit more up to date for that time.
There's also some fun stuff about the local hunt and some comparisons between Stig hunting for food and the local hunt just going out hunting because it's fun to do. There's the horse and hounds hunt, obviously. It's all done with the usual sort of red-coated, helmeted regalia that goes with it. Of course, Barney's sister Lou is a keen rider, and she gets invited to go out with the hunt, but it's not a sort of conventional where they're chasing a fox hunt. It's slightly different to that, Brian. It also involves a nice little joke as well.
Oh, yes, in the television version, because it's called a drag hunt, the mother mentioned something about it doesn't matter what they're wearing, which was a nice drag joke to have in there. And of course, the mother did know what a drag hunt was.
Barney, of course, and his grandparents are concerned about him and his imaginary friend, and they actually consult the local GP, the local doctor, who turns out to also coach the local boys' football team, and suggests that in order to draw Barney out of his shell and get him involved with others, that he come and join the football squad. Of course, this means more conflict with the Snargets, who also play in the same team, it says. But yeah, so there's little bits and pieces that have been added on, I think.
Yeah, and that, you know, for a dramatic version from that time, that makes sense. Those things sort of fill it out nicely.
There is, of course, a central mystery in the book and the series, which is, where has Stig come from? Now, if you're familiar with the 1963 children's novel by Clive King, you'll know that in the book, Barney and his sister Lou actually end up in a phrase that's now become very familiar to us, Brian, sort of time-slipping back to the distant past and encountering Stig's tribe, Stig's people.
Spoiler alert for a 60-year-old book.
Yes, exactly, yes. That doesn't happen as such in the series, but we will say there's some standing stones in this series and in the book, Brian.
Yes, there are, and it's very nice to see that, and it's very nice to see the explanation of how Stig got there being done with the time travel thing, and it gives them a nice resolution. So that, I thought, was handled quite well in this. And I think is not too far from the book, although as you say, they didn't include some of the things that were there in the book.
Now, the other thing I noticed when I was watching this series, Brian, and thinking back to the book, was a similarity with another series that we've not long ago considered, and with almost, you know, similar sounding names, Skellig, and another bit of classic children's fiction where a young boy, rather sort of fending for himself, discovers another strange character in unusual surroundings.
That is a theme that comes up quite a bit in children's literature.
And we've also talked about this idea of children being sort of sent away that comes up quite commonly in children's literature and the adaptations we discussed. And it seems to be a 20th century literature obsession in a way, I think, Brian. This idea that children are sent away to live with people in the country. They may be sent away as boarders or lodgers, something like that. And of course, in their unfamiliar new surroundings, they have some sort of could say Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, Narnia type adventure, or they encounter a strange character like Skellig or Stig. It seems not uncommon in this stuff that we talk about.
That's right. And what it combines with is this idea of the children encountering something amazing that only they learn about and the adults remain oblivious. And that's something that we see, as you say, in Skellig, and we see it here in Stig of the Dump. I thought of Narnia for that very much. And when we talked about Five Children and It, which was a group of siblings, but had a similar feel as well.
And there's the young child in The Children of Green Knowe, sent away to live with his... Is she his great-grandmother or something in the house surrounded by the floods, which we talked about?
Yes, that's right. That fits into some of that as well.
And I did wonder, when I was sort of doing the research, making some notes about this series, about some of the separation anxiety that this literature of the 20th century may reflect. And something I've been reading about quite a lot recently, Brian, which sort of set this off for me, was particularly this idea of displaced people during and after World War II. Here in the UK, of course, we have, I suppose, two famous examples. We have the children evacuated from the East End of London to go and live in the country. That caused, or, you know, that has been the prompt for several bits of literature. And then, of course, we have the famous, or in a way infamous, kinder transport of Jewish children from Eastern Europe being evacuated to the UK. And I wonder if some of that thought of children being sent off, whether it just seems like it may have provoked or inspired some of the literature that we talk about.
Yeah, it may be. Certainly some of it comes from sort of the post-war years, with this being from 63, you know, on the order of 20 years later, and Narnia being a bit earlier and so on. Some of them are pre-war, but yeah, a lot of them are sort of from that period. So yeah, it's an interesting connection.
Yeah, I just, it occurred to me when I was watching this, as, you know, as I say, some of the stuff I've been reading about Europe in the World War II era recently. Anyway, fascinating stuff.
Interesting. So we should talk about some of our own thoughts about this, a little bit more than we already have. So, Eamon, what did you like about Stig of the Dump?
I like quite a lot about this series. I'm going to start by saying it's a very competent, lovely-looking BBC production. It has, I think they've done really well with the locations, Brian. You know, it looks like the grandparents' house looks great, but the woods look great, the quarry and the cave sort of dwelling for Stig. I thought all of that looked really well done, and I really enjoyed all that, Brian. What did you make of the sort of look of this series?
Yes, it was very good. It was good use of location work, especially. Yeah, all of that was done well. I also want to mention the cast. Thomas Brodie Sangster has a lot to do in this and has to carry quite a bit of it, and he does a lovely job with it. The other younger actors, the sister and also the Snargots, they're also good. They, you know, do what they need to, for sure. And then we have the grandparents. Phyllida Law and Jeffrey Palmer are wonderful in this. And they sort of elevate those home scenes to something that was much better than it would have been with more average actors than them.
As I think I said in our last episode, Brian, I would happily watch anything with Phyllida Law and Jeffrey Palmer in it. They're just wonderful. But I would also echo your thoughts that the kids themselves are great. I thought Thomas Brodie Sangster did a great job. Of course, he's gone on to a big career. He was Jojen Reed in Game of Thrones. He was, as you said last time, Brian, he was in Doctor Who. I think he's now got a series where he's playing the Artful Dodger, I believe, Brian.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Certainly at this point, early in his career, he was already doing some pretty good work.
And I like the Snargets. I think the other kids do a great job as well. They're all very believable as bullies. And particularly, I think the younger sibling is actually more interested in possibly making a friendship with Barney. Barney and finding out about Stig and being helpful whenever his big brother's not around. I think that's great stuff. I actually like as well, I think Perdita Weeks does a good job as the sister who seems disinterested, but actually ends up being recruited to the cause as the series goes on.
Yeah, she has a limited amount to do in this and does very well with it. She makes that character someone you want to watch, and when she becomes more supportive and when she has these interactions and involvement with the horse riding and the hunt, all of that is very good, and you want to watch her where it would be very easy to have her just be a distraction. So yeah, lots of good stuff there.
The writing of this series, now you're not familiar, I think, with the source material, Brian, but Peter Taban's written it for the screen, won an award for it. What did you think of the writing of the series?
I thought it was okay. It told the story. I think maybe 6 episodes was a little bit long for this story. You know, it was at the point 2002 when they were starting to tell things in a higher paced way, but at the same time they had this fairly long serial there. It was struggling a little bit to keep things interesting, I thought. But on the whole, it was good. I think it was pretty well done.
Yeah, I like the adaptation myself. I think he's done a good job. And actually, unusual for British Invaders to find you thinking the series is perhaps slightly too long and me being the other way with this one, Brian. But there you go.
Well, yeah, it falls in at that unusual time when not that much sci-fi and related things were being done on British TV, and it was sort of in between old and new ways of doing things, so I sort of noticed that. I will say that the makeup for Stig and the physical performance we had for Stig and the voice performance, that was very good indeed. That could have been a problem, and it was made to be quite compelling.
It's fantastic. You know, I really don't know how they did it in 2002, but it's a remarkable performance and a remarkable almost full body makeup and prosthetics for Stig, because he may spend most of the time just wearing a loincloth or shorts. And so it's really, you know, great stuff. Yeah, I think they did that really well, Brian.
Yeah, I think a lot of how they achieved that was just putting the time into it of, you know, getting the performances right and doing that type of makeup where you really spend the time making it and then applying it.
I'll also note that Debbie Wiseman's music for the series I quite liked as well, particularly when I read about her other remarkable credits. So yeah, I do like the sound and the look and the performances of this series.
Yeah, so we should talk about negatives. What did you not like as much in this?
Not a lot, Brian. I did notice that, you know, although they've updated it for 2002 from 1963, I think there's a certain childlike approach to various bits and pieces in this series, particularly how much Barney is allowed to wander off by himself, which I'm not sure his grandparents would really allow that much time away in 2002. And also he has a very sort of childlike approach to policing, which is sort of reflected in the series. There's a very hands-on community police officer who's around quite a lot. Sadly, I think that wouldn't be the case, but it is quite helpful for this show. What about yourself? Did you have more comments in the negatives on this one?
You know, it's an interesting point about it being a little dated in those ways. And I think the way they dealt with it was to say it was in this very small village, so it still had that older approach. But yeah, the way that children were being handled and some of those things, the sense of community, it did have sort of that earlier feel to it, which is interesting. That's an interesting point. I would also say it was a little bit long. It didn't hold my attention quite as well as I wanted it to. But the more I think about it, it was not too bad. But it did feel like something that was a little bit stretched out in some respects. And I wonder if some aspects of it have been done better in other things. But actually, it did pull things together. It did in the end, actually fairly satisfied with that.
Okay. I will note that I did, in the last episode, without giving any spoilers as to how they resolve the mystery of Stig, I did find that they'd rather borrowed from E.T. for the final episode, Brian, for the conclusion of this series.
It did have a little bit of that feel. So you definitely, and this is partly using an older story, there are a lot of things in here that we've seen elsewhere. And that's probably my biggest issue with it. And especially with us having just covered Skellig so recently, we have these tropes that we see there and we see here and we've seen in other things. But all in all, I think it did an okay job with those.
Okay, so possibly some of the other shows that we have mentioned in passing might do this sort of stuff better, but it's in that genre of children in a strange environment having adventures which the grown-ups don't know about. Interesting.
Yeah, and we've seen things that sort of go into much more an earlier style of doing that and different styles of doing that. So it's a little different than some of the others.
So I guess it must be time for our recommendations, Brian. Would you like to kick us off?
Yes. And, you know, I'm going to surprise myself a little bit. I am going to recommend this because I think they did do a nice job with these ideas, although we've seen some of them elsewhere. They did do a nice job with them, and there are some lovely performances here, and it looks very good as well. So yeah, I will recommend this.
Okay, well, listeners can probably tell that I really loved this. I had a great time with Stig of the Dump from 2002, and for £4 streaming, absolute bargain here in the UK at the moment. And if you've got your children, or if you've got your grandchildren staying with you at the moment, get it. Stick it on. I think they will enjoy this series. I think it's still a good watch for kids. So yeah, a sort of double thumbs up from us here at British Invaders. But as ever, if you've seen it, if you're familiar with the original book, or indeed the 1981 version, do get in touch and let us know what you thought.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a good point about it still being a good option for kids.
Great stuff.
So, in summary, Stig of the Dump introduced us to young Barney, who was staying with his grandparents and spending lots of time outside and exploring the local forest. And he encounters Stig, this pre-human hominid character who is living in a cave that is under a dump. And the two of them build a friendship and bond with each other, and we get a series of adventures happening with them, and there are concerns about Barney from his grandparents, and his older sister becomes involved. The area where Stig is living becomes threatened. And we have a conclusion where Stig has to escape this area and find somewhere else.
And it's got Phyllida Delore and Jeffrey Palmer in it.
Absolutely.
So that will do us for Stig of the Dump. Please come back next time. We're venturing into a strange world next time. Swords, sorcery, and comedy mixed together in another BBC show called Crodmandoon and the Flaming Sword of Fire, which was from 2009 on the Beeb. Plenty to talk about next time.
Yes, that is a very different one, and we will have some things to say about it for sure. Until then, you can find all of our past episodes, well over 400 of them, at BritishInvaders.com. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there and join in on the conversations. And you can also find us on Instagram and Threads. We are at British_Invaders_podcast on both of those sites.
Please come along and find us on Facebook or on the other socials and give us a follow.
Absolutely.
And please come and find us at vognetwork.com for the Voice of Geeks Network. British Invaders is one of the podcasts on there, but you'll also find gaming content, all sorts of stuff going on. Come and check it out at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, if Doctor Who has taught us anything over the years, it's to watch out for disused quarries.